2FM.
Yes, a big thank you to the two Johnnies for kicking off the weekend in entertaining fashion as always. It is Monday, September 19th. I'm Shane Dawson and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7 bell, Stephen Kelly and Alan Colley will be chatting all things association football as Arsenal sit top of the English Premier League and Shells claim the bragging rights of Dublin, leaving neighbours bowls while Derry dismantle Shamrock Rovers to claim FAI Cup semi-final spot. Stephen Ferris and Ian Keatley will look back on the opening weekend of the URC as Leinster and Ulster get off to a winning start, but Munster and Connacht were left licking their wounds after round one. And Conor Nyland will join us to reflect on a momentous weekend for Irish tennis and a Davis Cup playoff awaiting after victory over Barbados. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can do so by texting us 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Good evening. It's great to have your company on this Monday evening. Hope your weekend is off to a good start and hope you enjoyed a good weekend full of sport. Before we dive into our soccer chat, just a couple of news headlines, and we'll start off with actually soccer, just so it is. Aberdeen's Liam Scales had replaced the injured Andrew Omobamadeli in the Republic of Ireland squad for the Nations League fixtures against Scotland and Armenia. The 20-year-old Norwich City defender sustained a groin injury in his side's 1-1 draw against West Bromwich Albion. In the under 21 setup, Bernie's Derek Costello, NAC Breda's Anselmo Garcia McNulty, and the St. Pat's duo of Adam O'Reilly and goalkeeper David Odemosu have been added to the Republic of Ireland under 21 squad ahead of Friday's European Championship playoff first leg against Israel at Talis Stadium. Manager Jim Crawford has called up the quartet to replace the injured Luca Connell, Liam Kerrigan, Mark McGuinness, and David Harrington. I will get the thoughts of Alan Colley and Stephen Kelly on those squad updates very, very shortly. Sticking with football, Sean Boyd has signed a new contract with Shelburne a day after scoring a brace to dump Bows out of the FAI Cup and secure a semi-final place for Shells for the first time in a decade. The new deal will see him remain at Talca Park until the end of next season. And finally, just rounding up the World Rowing Championships in the Czech Republic, because it was another productive day for Ireland. The lightweight double of Aoife Casey and Margaret Creamon took first place in their heat and are back in semi-final action on Thursday morning. Sunita Pusper and Zoe Hyde also had a first place finish in their women's double sculls heat in first place. Also, their semi-final is on Friday. Afra Kyo, Emer Lam, Fiona Murta and Emily Hegley carried plenty of expectation into these championships, of course, after their bronze medal at the Tokyo Olympics last year. And they came out on top of the women's four heat. The men's four team of Jack Dorney, Nathan Timoney, Ross Corrigan and John Carney are also through to the semi-finals after finishing second in their heat behind Britain. Kate O'Brien safely made it through to Friday's PR2 women's single sculls final after finishing second in her heat. And there was also a second place finish for Natalie Long and Tara Hanlon in their women's pair heat and advanced to Thursday's semi-final. Alison Bergen was the last Irish athlete out today, but despite a strong finish, she missed out on a spot in the AB semi-final of women's single sculls and will compete in the CD semi-final instead. So don't forget, as always, there's sports news anytime on the RTE News app and RTE.ie. However, Alan Colley, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Shane. How are you?
I'm very well, as you might suspect. And we will be chatting FAI Cup very shortly, and I might even get a bit happier, a bit giddier there. But we are going to start with the international setup. As I mentioned in the news headlines, there Liam Scales replaces Omobamadeli, a couple of changes in the under 21 squad as well. We play Scotland and we play Armenia. What are you hoping to see from the Scottish match this weekend, first and foremost, Alan Colley?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the game, Shane, and hopefully, as you say, we see more of what we've seen obviously in the last five or six, seven internationals, where we've been on a really good run. Obviously against the Scottish team in the fixture at home, we dismantled them comfortably as well, which was a fantastic performance, and we've built up a lot of momentum over the last few months, so you're hoping that will carry on. Obviously it's a tough game away to Scotland, but I suppose you just want to see that momentum carried on, because that's one thing that Stephen has built up over the last number of months, despite the sticky start, shall we say. But we're kind of well over those humps now, I think, and he's looking like he's getting not only a settled squad but a settled team, most importantly. And you could nearly name 8 or 9, obviously you mentioned there a couple of the injuries, but you could nearly name 8 or 9 of the starters now that he's gone to in the last few games, which is always a good thing. That's one thing I always look for, and throughout many chats that we have, Shane, is continuity and team selection. That once you're getting that, I think you always are in with a really good chance if you know your best 8 or 9 out of your 11 every week, and obviously allow for the odd suspension or injury here and there. So I think that's exactly what Stephen will be. He'd be disappointed with Amad Bamidele pulling out because
he's had a trouble with a few injuries already. Like,
he has, yeah. And when you think when he burst on the scene initially, like, there was so much hope, and obviously all the hype and has turned to Nathan Collins because what he has done in the past year. But there was similar hype towards Amad Bamidele when he burst on the scene initially and was absolutely brilliant in his first couple of games, and looking like he would go on to have an unbelievable career, which he still, I think, will absolutely have. So I think the fact that Stephen hasn't really got him, because he obviously suffered that long term injury, and the fact that he's back now and he's been playing every week with Norwich and playing really well with Norwich, so it's really disappointing to hear that he's going to miss out on this camp as well, because he's one that I'd say for the future going forward, Stephen would have been pinning his hopes on the likes of him, Nathan Collins, maybe John Egan as a trio, which is a really, really strong trio when you look at it like that on paper. I think Darragh O'Shea will come into the reckoning now as well. He was brilliant in the game against Ukraine also that night that we were over there in the last game. So I think he'd be disappointed about the Amad Bamidele injury.
And Nathan Collins, you mentioned there, I think a national hero after his antics at the weekend. According to David Snaid, friend of the show, had a nice tweet putting a postage stamp, and the FEI, I think, tweeted out a video of James McLean giving Nathan Collins a good welcome into the Irish squad, and referencing that we will be chatting Premier League football very shortly. Stephen Kelly will be joining us for that. So yeah, no, it will be interesting to see how Ireland get on. One player that is back, and I suppose when you're getting to a stage where there are boring squad announcements, that's a good thing, because that brings that continuity. But one man that is back is Robbie Brady, and he was up on media duty earlier today, and Tony O'Donoghue threw a few questions towards Robbie.
No, it's been great being back in. It's just hard to pick up where you left off, and as well, team happy enough to have me back in, and obviously delighted to be here. So yeah, looking forward to a good week ahead, hopefully.
What was it like while you were out? I mean, obviously the injury was a big issue. Did you feel at some point that you mightn't ever get back to this level?
No, it's just obviously it's difficult when you're out, and when you're missing the trips, it's a hard one to take. But my body wasn't behaving itself, and then I managed to get a lot of work in the off season. To be fair, Damien here helped me with my rehab, and then in this summer I done a lot of work in the off season and hit the ground running in pre season, and I knew myself with the work I done off season and the pre season I got into my legs. I felt strong and confident in going into them, but once you get the first couple in, you get your first 90, and then you can't replicate the hard yards put into your legs like into a full pre season or stop start. It's not the same, but when you get a run of games and you get that, like I said, them hard yards into your legs, you feel confident and strong, and that's where I'm at the minute. Everything's been good so far, so long may it continue.
Long may it continue indeed. Alan, it's great to see Robbie back.
Great to see Robbie Brady back. Yeah, he's had a difficult couple of seasons, and Stephen's been a long time admirer of Robbie Brady, and that's one thing as well he's alluded to in a lot of his press conferences, even when Robbie wasn't involved. And I always felt once he got himself back settled at a club where he was playing every week, which he's obviously doing now, and getting regular game time, that he was always going to come back into the fold, because as I said, Stephen has been a big admirer of him, and I think he'll be a big addition back involved as well. A fit, strong Robbie Brady is a big addition, I think, to the squad, because we all know technically how good he is, and I think that's the only question mark that was around him, was the fact, just the fitness levels, because he was clubless for a long time, and obviously he wasn't involved and not playing. So now that he's back, involved, playing every week as well at Preston, I think Stephen will be delighted to have him back in the fold.
Absolutely. And speaking of Irish players over in England and players that have been called up and doing well, Gavin Bazunu, of course, at Hampton's number one. They went down on Friday 1-0 to Aston Villa. Nathan Collins, as we mentioned there, was sent off for an incident with Jack Grealish. It was very much, you know, that famous commentary of "he's Kung Fu scissor kick" when Cantona jumps into the stand.
It was just reckless, wasn't it, Shane?
It was
silly on his behalf. And that's one thing I think people have to remember with Nathan Collins. Obviously there's a lot of hype around him, and as I said, I was at the game in Ukraine when he scored that goal, and it was just a magical moment. It was one of those moments that we'll always look back on, and maybe one of those goals. But a lot has happened in his short career even since then, in terms of the move and going to Wolves, and now he's playing every week. But he's still very, very young, and he still has a lot to learn. So I think that will be, he knew himself, you could see his reaction afterwards. It was just that split second where it was a moment of madness, a silly decision that he made. I don't think he caught Grealish as much as what they were saying on the commentary at the time.
No.
But as I said, it was just that mistimed tackle, which was a rash challenge, which comes again with young age and immaturity, if you like, in performances sometimes with your decision making. He's a lot to learn, as I say, but it's good maybe for him that he's come straight into the camp, because as I say, he'll be welcomed in with open arms. But Stephen is good, obviously, figure for him as well, I think, back in the fold for an incident like that. I'm sure the club will look after him as well at Wolves, but I think just coming back into the Irish fold as well with Stephen and how highly they rate him and look after him, they'll take care of him.
Yeah, no, from no, well, not knowing Stephen that well, but from chatting to people that have been around him as well, he's exactly the sort of person you want, as for an arm around you and can talk to you off field as well, and really mature you as a character, not only as a footballer. I did mention Bazuna there. Aston Villa 1 Southampton 0 on Friday evening. Was he at fault for the goal? It's hard to tell. I know some people were saying yes and some people were saying no, and like, it's difficult to really, I think, surmise how he's got on this season so far, is it?
Yeah, and it's unfair, I think, as well, because to pin any blame on the fact that obviously where Southampton are at maybe as well, he's one of those keepers that sometimes in a situation like that, when you're playing for a club, Shane, it can work both ways. If you're one of those goalkeepers at a club that look like they're struggling, you have a lot more to do than a keeper maybe who at the top end of the table and has less to do. And as I say, you could be pulling off save after save and things looking great, but also it looks like you're conceding a lot of goals as well. So it can work for you and against you, I feel, in a situation like that for some goalkeepers. And you often hear goalkeepers, you see sometimes you see the stats, most saves made, but generally it's by a keeper that might be down near the bottom of the table and they're fighting relegation and he's having to do loads more than a goalkeeper that would be up near the top. So sometimes it can be tricky to gauge just how he's doing, but I think considering his age, considering the big fee, all that kind of stuff, how he's adapted to Premier League football, and again going back to even what I was saying about Nathan Collins, he's such a young boy still with so much to learn and so much to improve on, I think he's done absolutely fine in his early part of his career in Premier League football.
Absolutely, and I suppose it would be good for Mark Travers as well. You know, not so long ago that he conceded nine goals against Liverpool as well. So coming into the Irish setup would be a nice breakaway. And Seamus Coleman and Everton got their first victory on Sunday as well. Is the pressure lifting somewhat in Frank Lampard?
Yeah, and I think to be fair to Frank Lampard as well, the performances have been a lot better in recent weeks. Again, it looks like he's getting a settled team and players back. You look at them, obviously, Onana and Guy came back and he played yesterday as well. And they just look a little bit more stronger, even up the top end of the pitch with Demarai Gray and Gordon as well. So, and now Maupay, who's come in and he's been that central kind of striker that they didn't have because they were having to play Anthony Gordon through the middle, which wasn't ideal as well. So to be fair to Lampard, even though it may look on paper that he wasn't going as well, he did have a lot of injuries to contend with as well to some key players. So now that he's getting some injured players back, a settled team, and the performances have been better, to be fair to him, and that was a huge win. It's so important though to get your first win, and that's massive for them, and that could kickstart them as well. I know obviously West Ham were in a similar situation, they're down near the bottom as well, and people are suggesting is Moyes under pressure. He'll be disappointed with the start, but by no means is he under pressure, Shane. He's done an unbelievable job at West Ham in the last couple of seasons. I think it's finished 6th and 7th. And
did you see him snap in the post-match presser?
No, because I was in Derry, so I didn't actually see that.
For anyone who is not aware of the incident, apparently a reporter just called him asking a question and referred to him as Moyesy.
No,
and he took very easily. You don't know me that well. We're not friends, right? And David Moyes is my name.
Really?
Hang on.
Absolutely, yeah, proper order. Yeah. Know your place, Shane.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, know your place, reporters. Don't overstep.
Know your place. But I like some of the comments and people suggest that maybe is he in trouble? I don't think so. To be fair to West Ham, they've brought in a couple of new players as well that are taking time to settle in. And it's difficult as well to maintain the highs of what they were riding high for such a long period last year, up kind of hovering around those top four places at one stage and in the top six. Yeah. Going in Europe as well, and some of the key players, the likes of Bowen and Antonio, with such brilliant seasons for them last year, something like what maybe we've seen with Son, they haven't quite hit the heights this year, and it's difficult to maintain that form year in, year out. So especially at a club like West Ham, where you're relying on those two or three key players, and if they're not doing it for you, it's difficult then as to where the goals may come in other places around the pitch. So it's been difficult in that regard, but certainly I think David Moyes is a fantastic manager, and by no means for me is he under any pressure.
Okay, we're going to continue our Premier League conversation. For those hoping Stephen Kelly was going to dial in, unfortunately we can't get through to him. Is he on his route? He's over in England. A lot going on across the water, so perhaps there are some telecommunications issues, who knows. But Alan,
Alan Colley is live in studio still with me. Arsenal, top of the league, and Vieira scored a goal for Arsenal. Ah, this is proper old school association football.
The good days are back. The good days are back, Shane. Yeah, look, we've had many chats since the season has started, obviously, about Arsenal, and I mentioned about the fact we were watching the documentary and stuff. I think they've been brilliant. They've been the story of the season so far. I think they've been the best team, and hence why they're on top of the table as well. But the performances have also reflected that. You look at Spurs, who are riding high and doing really, really well, and I know we'll come to them in a moment, but if you compare their performances to Arsenal, even though they're riding high, they haven't been anywhere near as good. Not only are Arsenal getting the points on the board, but the performances have backed that up. They've been brilliant as well, which is great for them going forward. And I just think he's done a brilliant job, Arteta. The recruitment was key during the season, during the off-season, who he brought in, the likes of Zinchenko, Jesus, top quality players you're bringing into the club, good characters as well. Jesus has hit the ground running, he's had a fantastic start. And yeah, I think, to be fair,
is it finally clicking for Arteta? Absolutely,
Shane.
It's all coming together.
Yeah, I think so. And if you look at, as I say, I go back to that documentary and reference it a fair bit in the conversations I have now, because there was a period there with Aubameyang and a couple of, maybe you could call, bad eggs that were just kind of not setting the tone that what he wanted around the place, especially in terms of a lot of the young players that they have, and he wanted people to be setting the right example for them as well, which Aubameyang wasn't. And that's tough, Shane, for maybe a young manager like that to go against the heavy hitter. And Aubameyang was the heavy hitter, and he took him on and basically said, I'm the manager and I'm not having you, out the door. And I really admire him from that, because I said lesser managers wouldn't have done that and they would have gone along with it, and in the end they probably would have ended up losing or getting the sack anyway. So the fact that he went for him and got him out of his club, I think it was brilliant management. And for anyone who hasn't seen it, check it out in the documentary, because that's exactly what he did. The board and all these, they weren't happy at all. They were saying, we can't get rid of him, and he says, I want him out. And that was the end of it. And you look at the since they've gone on, since he's been gone, the atmosphere around the place, the environment, as you say, he speaks a lot about that and the culture that he's created, and it's reflected in the performances. They've been absolutely brilliant, they really have. And Jesus, Zinchenko, those players have been magnificent since they've come in. So the only slight little blip, and I think that was important yesterday, that they bounced back with such a brilliant win, because the criticism last week after they lost to Man United was typical Arsenal. They have a great start, but when they come up against one of the big clubs, they let themselves down. But for, if anyone who watched that game against Man United, Arsenal were absolutely brilliant. There was just a 20 minute spell where he made the changes, three or four changes, which, looking back, I'd say he probably regrets, and it just upset the rhythm of the team at that stage. Whereas I felt, had he made even one change and kept the fluency that was in the team right at that moment in the match, I felt they would have gone on and probably got the equaliser, gone on to win anyway. But he went all out for it, made three or four changes, and they got caught in the counter attack not long after, and Rashford scored. But in that game, Arsenal were absolutely brilliant, so they were. So to bounce back yesterday in against the good Brentford team as well, and Brentford have caused a lot of problems for a lot of teams, especially at home, I think that was a really convincing win, and it just shows you where Arsenal are at this season. I really think they'll be up there in that top four, because I really like the look of them.
Up next for Arsenal is a London derby against Spurs. Before we chat about Spurs though, the youngest ever Premier League player made his appearance for Arsenal in their 3-0 victory that we were chatting about there. Eden Nwaneri, 15 years of age, is 15 years of age, too young to be playing a professional men's soccer match.
Yeah, we had this the other night as well with the lad up the north with 13 years of age. Now, that is too young in my eyes.
Yeah, and Christopher Atherton, for those who weren't aware, 13 years and 329 days old, who came on for Northern Irish side Glenavon in their second half of their 6-0 League Cup win against Dollingstown. So yeah, we were chatting about that. 13 years, I think, yeah, that's
too young. For me, that was my take on it the other night. I just think, and the reason for me saying that, Shane, is what's the rush with a 13 year old kid that you feel the need? Is he going to make that much of a difference that you feel the need that you have to put him to a first team or a first team squad? So that's far too young in my eyes.
Where do you draw the line in terms of age, because people develop at different ages?
I draw the line at 13. Absolutely. But then you're asking me now about a 15 year old. So,
and the Premier League, with respect to the Northern Irish League Cup, It's not the English Premier League.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so he's obviously seriously talented, this boy. If Arteta feels as though he needs to, he's bring him into a first team squad that's already riding high in the Premier League. You know, so he must be seriously talented. I'm a lot more easier with that age, maybe, than, and again, you probably look after in terms of the welfare of the kid. He's been extremely well looked after, I presume, at the Premier League. That's not to say the lad at Glenavon's not well looked after. Absolutely he is.
Yeah.
I just think the age is too young at 13, but 15 I would be a little bit easier with. And you have to remember Wayne Rooney came on and playing at 16. Now again, you're talking about the way it developed, how quickly young lads develop or how less quickly some others. He was fully developed nearly, Wayne Rooney, at 16. You look at him in his physical condition, like he was a serious athlete at the time, exactly. And I'm sure it might be something similar for that lad. So I'm a little bit easier with 15, but the one last week with the 13, that doesn't sit right with me at all.
Yeah, and I think it's about the supports around you as well. And I'm sure there were supports for the 13-year-old. There were supports, of course, with Evan Ferguson when he was with Bowes, because there was a bit of attention around that. But it's about how they handle it. Because, I mean, even if you look at, say, top of my head, Freddie Adu, Terry Dixon, wasn't he meant to be held as the next best thing? And then if you do kind of not fail, but you kind of just go off into the distance, or you know, you don't exactly make a career at top level clubs, it's difficult for a young man or indeed young girl as well in women's football as well to handle those pressures.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But the one thing as well, and I go back to that documentary, which was brilliant, Arsenal, now it's like everything with the Premier League clubs. They have so much resources now that every little aspect of a club is taken care of. It's not just about the football anymore. As you say, the psychology of everything and the welfare of players. And there's almost like a life coach for every individual and all sorts of different things that if you're having problems or anything like that. So that's how much the game has evolved and changed over the years compared to maybe years ago where that wouldn't have been the case at all. And there's one in particular who I'm not sure his title at the club, but he comes across really well in the documentary as well, where he's almost like a personal kind of,
yeah, I think most clubs are like the player liaison officer and who looks after kind of sorting accommodation and everything else for these
all
players.
Sorts. So as I say, the likes of that lad would have been so well looked after and prepared. And to be fair to Arteta as well, he's a good person and he speaks a lot about that in the documentary as well. And I wouldn't think if that lad wasn't prepared or well ready, or if he didn't feel he was ready to go into an environment like that and play in a first team match of 15, there's no way he would have thrown the kid in. I've no doubt about that whatsoever.
Okay, well, it will be interesting to see if Ethan does appear more for Arsenal. And even if you're, like, say, 18, 19-year-old, or you're in the kind of under 21 squads and all this, you might be a bit put out. Is this 15-year-old coming along and leapfrogging me?
I said that to Marie the other night about I wouldn't be too happy if a 13-year-old was coming on ahead of me. I'd be knocking on the manager's door the next day saying, what's going on here?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Spurs, 6-2 winners, Son hat-trick. How good have Spurs been this season, or is it they haven't really been tested, or is that a bit unfair to say?
Probably a bit of both. They haven't been good, to answer your first question. They've been okay and they've been efficient in what they've done, but they haven't pulled up any trees in terms of their performances, or you haven't gone away from a game thinking, wow, Spurs were amazing there. But the key thing is they're getting results, and that's, like, you speak to any Spurs fan at the moment, and once they're getting the results and they're sitting third in the table, and especially with the investment that's gone into the team, I think they've a fantastic manager as well, and I think it bodes well for them in the fact that it's a good complaint that if you're not playing as well as you can play and you've still levels to go up, that you're sitting third and you're picking up points and winning game 6-2. And it was a moment of magic, well, three moments of magic really, that won the game for them the other day, because at 3-2 the game was very much in the balance. Even though Leicester are obviously bottom of the table at the moment, they played very well on the night, and as I say, they gave away two sloppy goals from set pieces. But then at 3-2, as I say, the game was very much in the balance. I go back to even the point there we were saying about Arteta making the substitution. Brendan Rodgers was just about to bring on his attacking players to really go for the game, and literally just as he was getting them ready, Son was bending one into the top corner, and at 4-2 you think it's game over now. Had I got the players on maybe 2 or 3 minutes earlier, that may have not happened and we could have gone on. So it's all ifs and buts, but certainly in terms of Spurs at the moment, I think they'll be over the moon where they are in the table. I think the manager will be delighted, but I still think he'll believe there's major improvement still in the team, which can only be a good thing if you're, as I say, a Spurs fan. And even from a manager's point of view, if you're looking at it thinking, like, we still have levels to go here, like, and we're sitting where we are, like, it must breed a lot of confidence into what he can achieve maybe this season, because I think they're well capable of getting into the top four this year. They have the squad, the players now to back it up. It's interesting that he's kind of, some of those new players that he signed who I thought would feature heavily haven't really featured much, to be fair. Now Longley played at the weekend, he brought Bissouma on, Richarlison started, which was the big decision obviously instead of Son. But it was so good, Shane, to see Son come on and score. I love him as a player. And for anyone listening, in terms of young kids, and they'll be all heading off to their training grounds now or anything like that, young boys, young girls, anywhere you're going, or any parent, if Spurs are playing, get them to watch Son. His attitude is absolutely unbelievable, Shane. Always smiling, even the disappointment of not being picked the other night, and I'm sure he was devastated. He comes on and answers in the right way, does his talking by with his football, and then his interview afterwards, he speaks so well and how humble he is about how he said himself, I wasn't playing well enough. I was so disappointed that I haven't been contributing to the team, and I knew myself and I was getting myself down. And then he comes on and scores a hat-trick, and he's just such a brilliant player.
You can nearly see the relief just oozing from him.
Yeah, and the goals were goals were just incredible. Like, left foot, right foot, brilliant.
It's interesting you mentioned Spurs haven't played well yet. They had a 6-2 victory in the Premier League, so it paints a very sorry picture for Leicester City. Brendan, before we chat about the FAI Cup, my final question on the Premier League, Brendan Rodgers, it's only a matter of time, is it?
I would think so, yeah. And judging by his kind of demeanour and his body language as well, he looks like a manager now, or he looks like a man who'd almost be relieved if they relieved him of his duties, Shane, to be honest with you, because 6 defeats in a row now. I know he took it on the chin, this one, saying, look, he's responsible, and he is responsible for the results. But the game before, where he did the press conference afterwards, and he's speaking all about basically going public about the club and the situation in terms of the financial side of things as well, that he's got no support in the off season as well to bring in players. Like, that's not good when you're going public with things like that, you know, and the board will be looking at that. I think it's a question at the moment. I was reading over the weekend that if they were to sack him, they're looking at a major payout, obviously, in terms of his contract. So that could be the stumbling block right now for will he go in the coming days or whatever. But I think you're right. I think it is only a matter of time. But I think if he was to go now, Shane, I don't think his credibility is damaged all that much.
Okay.
Whereas if he was to hang around for another maybe up to Christmas, and they were still in the position they were in, and they were after losing 12 games or 14 games in a row, and it was really kind of disastrous stuff, then I think his credibility will be damaged. But I think right now at this moment in time, because I think he's a brilliant manager, Rodgers, and I think if he was to go now, I still think you'd see him coming back somewhere else in the not too distant future. It wouldn't be a case of, like, when he left Liverpool, he almost had to go up to Celtic and obviously kind of reignite his career again. I don't think that would be the case if he was to leave Leicester right now.
Okay. One other match we did mention, Nottingham Forest 2, Fulham 3, another defeat for Nottingham Forest. Who knew bringing in about 64 players wasn't going to be ideal for players to gel? Brighton did appoint a new manager, Roberto De Zerbi, former Shakhtar Donetsk and Sassuolo boss. And Christoph Freund looks set to be announced as Chelsea's new sporting director. So, Alan, they are topics we are going to cover in the not too distant future, I'm sure. But we are going to chat FAI Cup football, because the FAI Cup semi-finals are confirmed. Waterford will host Shells, while Treaty United will have to make the journey to Derry City. Both matches live on RT Television on October 16th. That is a Sunday afternoon. Derry Treaty at 2 p.m. and Waterford Shells 4:45. So the teams got into the semi-finals because Treaty United beat UCD 4-1 on Friday night, and Curran helping himself to a hat-trick in that one. Waterford knocked Dundalk out, another Premier Division scalp, after they knocked Holders Pats out a little bit earlier on. They were winning 3-1 up until the last minute when Keith Ward got one back, so 3-2 it finished on Sunday. It took extra time for Derry City to overcome Shamrock Rovers 3-1. Danny Lafferty and Brandon Kavanagh coming back to hunt their former club. And of course, Alan, I think Shelburne beat Bohemians as well in Talca Park. And that's where we might begin our conversation. But before I get your thoughts, let's get the thoughts of Shell's manager, Damien Duff. He was chatting to Adrian Eames.
So, absolutely brilliant performance from the guys. And the way I describe it is they played the perfect game from minute one to the last kick of the game.
I think a lot of people, Damien, enjoyed it as an occasion. Lovely sunshine, packed Talca Park. Did you enjoy it?
Listen, I did. It's obviously nerve-wracking on the side. I won't lie about that. But listen, absolutely brilliant performance. The standout victory, I guess. I was waiting for kind of one of them at home, you know, a big Dublin derby, obviously cup quarter-final here at Talca. We've had some amazing wins, amazing performances this year, but I don't think we've delivered that and like that as yet. So today was brilliant for everyone involved with Shelburne.
You said after the win over Bray Wanderers in the opening round of the cup that to win the cup with Shelburne as boss of Shelburne would be the pinnacle of your career. That's quite a statement given all that you achieved in your career with Premier League medals and 100 caps for Ireland. Is that still the dream, to win the cup now with Shelburne?
It absolutely would be the pinnacle of my career. Football, being a footballer, that's all I ever knew, and that's what I did since I was 7, 8. So, you know, to do that and as a footballer was just went hand in hand with, I guess, practicing day in, day out. Whereas you retire, okay, what will I do? Being a manager, being a coach is alien to me. I'm learning the game all over again. So it's absolutely out of comfort zone stuff I'm doing. So if I was to win at Michelle's, without doubt, it'd be the pinnacle, yeah.
Pinnacle of his career. I asked this genuine with complete neutrality. What have you made of Damien Duff and Shelburne this season? Because that was a huge, huge result. One I wasn't expecting as well, because Bows were awful. Shells were very good.
Yeah. First of all, Shane, I was surprised by the result. Mm. And that's not kind of... The reason I say that is because it was so... I was asked in the lead up to this game to call it, and I couldn't, because it was so evenly matched between the two teams, because both of them have been struggling in the league at different stages throughout the year. And if someone had to say to me, oh well, one of them will win 3-0 comprehensively, I probably would have laughed. So when I heard the result...
But Bowes already battered Chels in Talca earlier this season.
Yeah,
made mockery of them.
Yeah, I remember that. But there's still not much between those two teams. And even if you look at the league table, bar from about fourth down, there's not much between the teams at all, Shane, you know, in terms of the performances that we're seeing week in, week out. So... And Shells and Bows are very much in that mix. And if you look at them, obviously Bows have lost their manager, and they got the bounce in the Shamrock Rovers game, which takes care of itself. But since then, I watched them last week against Derry. First half they were poor, a little bit better in the second half. You just don't know what you're going to get from Bows, hence them losing their manager, and it's been so up and down. From Damien Duff's point of view, he mentioned it himself there, that he's very much learning on the job. And when he came into the league, he was a hero of mine. So for him to be involved in our league, I thought this is incredible for someone of his stature. And I think he's found it difficult at different stages, and I'm sure he'd admit that himself. But he's so determined, he's so bullish in his comments as well about what he wants to achieve and what he wants to do. For a Shelburne fan, it must be a dream to hear him say stuff like, after all he's achieved in his career, for him to say to win the cup would be the absolute pinnacle. And for them to put on a performance like they did yesterday in front of the home fans and get to the semi-final in the manner that they did, beating rivals Bows 3-0, I think it's an absolutely fabulous result for them, and fabulous for Damien Duff as well, Shane. So I'd be looking forward to the semi-finals now. I think Derry have obviously got the best of the draw, but I don't think we should be disrespectful towards the likes of Tralee or Waterford. They're there on merit. You mentioned Waterford have already beaten Pats and out of beating Dundalk, two massive clubs in their own right, and for them to beat them and get themselves to the semi-final is a brilliant return for them. I think Tommy Barrett's done a brilliant job at Tralee since he's come in, but he'll be under no illusions going up to the Brandywell against Derry, who were very, very good yesterday, Shane. We were obviously working on the game. The first half they were absolutely brilliant, totally dominated Shamrock Rovers, and it should have been out of sight at half time. The game should have been dead and buried. Shamrock Rovers went down to 10 men, but they were brilliant in the second half, and they deserve a lot of credit as well for the way they reacted and the character they showed. But it was just a bridge too far when it got to extra time in terms of the legs and the energy, and I think that's what's going to catch up on them a little bit as well in terms of the league. But overall, I think it's been a brilliant weekend for the clubs, and I'll be very much looking forward to the semi-finals.
Absolutely. Women's semi-final coming up this weekend as well. In a word, Alan, or in a couple of words, who is going to compete in the final then of the men's FEI Cup final?
Derry Shelburne.
Oh, there we go. Okay, Alan Colley, lots to chat about in the coming days in soccer, but we're going to move our attention to rugby in a few moments time, so stick with us here in Game On.
Game On.
Rugby.
Now, as well as plenty of drama in the FEI Cup, there was plenty of drama in the opening weekend of the URC, and I'm delighted to say Stephen Ferris and Ian Keatley join me now to reflect on the opening weekend. Stephen Ferris, if I come to yourself first, and if we begin with Ulster's 36-10 victory over Connacht, what did you make of the Ulster performance with a matchday team of which 18 of the 23 came from the Ulster Academy?
Yeah, excuse me. Thanks very much for having me on. It was a really good night in Belfast. Usually Ulster would kick the league off on the Friday night, but that didn't happen this year. And you know, the boys, I think it was 10 of the starting 15, you know, homegrown players, and I've been banging the drum for the last decade probably since I hung up the boots about getting more homegrown players to play in front of the home province crowd, and you know, really relish those special nights at the Kingspan Stadium. And I thought they played a lovely brand of rugby at times. They did throw it around a bit in the first 15-20 minutes, didn't really get much joy, and then turned back to their car game, used them all quite well. Young Tom Stewart, he got man of the match, and it was on his first start for Ulster. He's had a few games off the bench. I think that was his seventh appearance for Ulster, so a big future ahead for him. He's also on the Emerging Ireland Tour, which is happening obviously very soon as well. So So, yeah, it was a good night all round, and to be honest, Connacht didn't really fire a shot. I think the try that they scored, Dylan Blade, it was a beautiful try, but we just didn't see enough of that all night, and also ran out worthy winners.
Yeah, Ian, before we chat about Connacht, I suppose, just sticking with Ulster, Ian Henderson, I think, gave an interview to the URC website, and he mentioned that he hopes Ulster can take the next step. And as Stephen mentioned there, young Tom Stewart, man of the match. We've seen Stockdale return. McCluskey was just unbelievable as well. How far can Ulster go in this competition, and what is the next step for the province?
Yeah, well, I thought last year they really took a step forward and they really looked like title contenders last year, obviously falling short. But it looks like they started the season exactly in the same rich vein of form that they did last year. And they're playing a really nice, exciting brand of rugby. As you said there, McCluskey, I don't know what this guy has to do to get more Irish caps, but he's actually got a very good passing game. And as you see, he's very good carrying. Now he's kind of He threw the old Sonny Bill Williams offload on the weekend, which was nice to see. But that partnership in the centre on the weekend looked like something to get excited about.
Yeah, I think he's got six Ulster caps, or six Ireland caps, I should say, single figures. And you mentioned, I suppose it shows the quality that Ireland possess in that position as well. But do you think he can really break into national plans now?
Yeah, it's a tough one, as you said. The guys who are there, you've got Bundyaki, Gary Ringrose and Robbie Henshaw, and it's not like they're doing anything wrong. As good as McCluskey's performances have been, he almost needs to do more to really push a place into that Irish setup, but I don't know how much more he can do. He's playing very well and he's consistently around 4 or 5 seasons in a row now he's been doing it, so he's definitely knocking on the door, but he just needs a bit of luck, maybe an injury or two to get in there, because Bundy, Ringrose and Henshaw have been doing so well.
Yeah, very much so. Stephen, from a Connacht perspective then, it is round one. They've played one match. I mean, you know, we'll get the Leinster. They've only played one pre-season match. So, you know, people are still trying to find their feet and find their rhythm, find their form. But how concerning would you be if you were a Connacht fan, Stephen?
I wouldn't be that concerned, to be honest. Like, there's so many important players to come back. Jack Cardy, Bundyaki, Prendergast, Mac Hansen, Butler as well in the back row. When the other lads get up to speed, I think they just looked a little bit rudderless. I'm not sure if that's because they just didn't have any possession. And then when they did, they gave it straight back to Ulster and they just couldn't get a foothold whatsoever. And I think, I don't think Ulster had to get out of second or third gear to, rack up 30 points on the scoreboard. So I think that the most concerning thing for Connacht fans is the next, probably not the Ulster game, it's the next 2 or 3 weeks and how they respond. They've a trip away to South Africa, and then they have a couple of tough games, after that. So, before you know it, you could be 4 or 5 games deep into the URC competition and you might only have a couple of points on the board. And, then again, you're playing catch-up, and as we all know, getting into that top 8 come May time is really, really difficult. So, yeah, don't be hitting the panic button just yet with Connacht. I think, with those quality players to come back in, they'll definitely, pose a threat to a lot of teams in the URC.
How difficult will that trip to South Africa be, though? I know they've included in their 28-man squad Bundyaki, Mac Hansen, Finlay Beelam, these big-name players as well. Also included actually are 4 players who were selected in that Emerging Ireland squad you mentioned, Caelan Blade, Sam Iloquin Prendergast and Dylan Tierney-Martin. But to go now down to South Africa, coming off the back of an opening round Interpro defeat, it's not the ideal scenario, is it?
No, it's not. It's more about confidence too. I think that would have been one where they got back in the bus. Andy Friend would have challenged him. Look, lads, we got another hit out. We missed the pre-season game. That's what it felt like actually on Saturday night at the Kings fan, that they were, they were just going through the motions. And they battled hard in defence. They made a hell of a lot of tackles. They made a hell of a lot of those tackles count. I think around set piece, Ulster just dominated there. And Ulster have a few more bodies to bring into their team to strengthen it up as well. So, yeah, Connacht, just draw a line in the sand, move on. It's a fresh start. Head away. You've got the Stormers next, then the Bulls, and then, you're at home to Munster. And try and pick something up in South Africa to bring that momentum back to that Munster game down in Galway.
Well, it will be interesting to see how the next few weeks go. As you mentioned there, Connacht face the Stormers next Saturday, where Ulster are away to the Scarlets on Saturday as well. Ian Keighley, if we move on to Zebre Leinster. Zebre 29, Leinster 33. Round one, and sure, we've already had a match of the season.
Yeah, it was a little classic already. Well, maybe it was down to maybe the game was kind of finished at half-time. Leinster, they started really well. They've shown their form that once they get into their 22, they're quite difficult to stop with just with their pick and goes and their intensity. But it was great to see Zebre come back in the second half, and hopefully that is a bit more what Zebre has to bring, because they've been a bit poor in the competition over the last few seasons. So hopefully that they look like they've improved, and hopefully they can bring that in a few more occasions this year. But a bit like I think Leo Cullen said after the game, they missed out in the preseason game, so that was actually a lot of their players' first game. So maybe there's a bit of rustiness there, but they still look good. They still look the team to beat. But I think Ulster are coming hot in their heels now from an Irish performance.
It's good, and it's good to see that competitiveness. Really, what did you make of their new signings, Ian?
Yeah, well, obviously Jason Jenkins came from Munster. He was a bit hindered with injuries when he was at Munster, but I think you can see the size of him. He was a big man. I saw him around Munster a few times. I was like literally looking up at him in awe. So he's a difficult man to stop. I know he scored a try from 2 metres out, and I wouldn't like to try and stop him now. He's a mouth of a man. And I can't pronounce the second name, the centre.
Charlie Ty.
Yeah. I was going to try it, and I was like, I don't embarrass myself here. he looks like he just needs a bit more time settling in, but he looks sharp. So another shrewd one or two signings from Leinster. They always make one or two little foreign signings to blend in with their Leinster homegrown crop. And it just gives that bit of excitement to get excited about for the fans when they make those foreign signings.
Before we move on to Munster, just on foreign signings, on Leinster's opponents, like Zebre, they brought in 21 players, 29 players went out, a new coach, and I know Benetton had a good win on the Friday night against Glasgow, 33 points to 11, but like, is the URC not about improving Italian rugby and improving the playing group in Italy, and then you're bringing in quite a lot of outsiders?
Yeah, it is, but sometimes those outsiders need to come in to give a little bit of additional knowledge to those young Italian players. I know Benetton, they've brought in a few foreigners, but they actually are playing a lot more young Italian players. So they're trying to get that blend of bringing the youth through, trying to surround them by a lot of foreign experienced players. And they're trying to look at those foreign players to try and start speaking a bit more Italian, rather than those foreigners coming in and just speaking English.
Yeah.
They're trying to get the Italian the foreigners to come in and trying to adapt the culture a bit more, and then to bring their knowledge. I know Rhino Smith that they brought in, the fullback for Treviso, and I can see him now. He's doing interviews and he's doing them in Italian, which is brilliant to see. And he's obviously bringing his class. He scored some unbelievable tries last year, and looks like he's hitting form running already this season.
Yeah, no, that's a very, very valid point. It will be interesting to see how it goes, and who wouldn't want to learn Italian as well? Beautiful language. Stephen, Munster 13, Cardiff 20, an opening round defeat for Munster in their post Johan van Gran era. What went wrong for Munster, and how long do you think it will take for these new coaches to make their mark and for it to click?
Well, in fairness, Graham Rowntree's been in like Munster for a significant period of time now, and he knows the players, he knows the tradition and the history that comes along with Munster rugby. And you know, I think Cardiff have made a few good signings, Liam Williams, Toby Faletau, the bolster of their side. You know, Malachi Fekitoa was in the centre for Munster, probably didn't have his best day. And like, Munster only made 4 clean breaks in the game. You know, you really need to make more clean breaks to get more points on the board. Outscored 3-1. They tried to go back to their power game a little bit, but that didn't work for them. And yeah, disappointing. Their line out, you know, especially their maul defence, the Cardiff lads got a few edges there, and you know, plenty to work on. But typical Munster,
look, you know, they left with a losing bonus point. Yes, they didn't perform well, but you know, they're a team that they'll always pick up those final one or two points along the way, and you know, they crucially add up towards the end of the season. But yeah, I think it's really difficult to say at this stage. You know, round one, you know, our backs against the wall, should questions start to be asked? And I think definitely not. You know, 3-4 rounds in, we'll have a much clearer idea of what direction the squads are going in. Probably the only team that are sort of in a similar position as last year in the league are the Dragons. You know, bitterly disappointing with, you know, shipping over 40 points in their opening game. And, you know, it's going to be a long, hard season for them. But the Irish provinces will be in fine fettle going into the business part of the season, I think, because they all have recruited pretty well. You know, fine, fit and healthy. They'll be able to give any of these South African teams a run for their money.
Okay, good stuff. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Jen, Stephen Ferris and Keith Lee, thank you both very, very much for joining me. As the lads mentioned there, Leinster and Ulster won't be getting carried away, and not time to press the panic button just yet for Munster or Connacht. Next week sees Zebre host Sharks, Glasgow host Cardiff and Leinster host Benetton all on Friday. Scarlets, Ulster, Bulls, Edinburgh, Stormers, Connacht, Ospreys, Lions are on Saturday, and Munster are away in Wales against the Dragons on Sunday. Now we're going to be chatting to Conor Nyland on Ireland's historic Davis Cup victory in a few moments' time. So stick with us here in Game On 2FM.
Game On.
Tennis.
Hey, very welcome back to Game On. And I'm delighted to say Conor Nyland joins me now to chat tennis and to chat Davis Cup tennis, because Ireland have beaten Barbados 3-2 in their Davis Cup match to progress to the World Group 1 playoffs. And the draw for those playoffs takes place tomorrow. Conor, to put this result into perspective for our listeners, how big of an achievement is this?
Hi, Shane. Well, listen, I've been involved as a player since 2000, and we've never been involved in a Davis Cup Group 1 match since then anyway. So don't quote me on it, but my sense is it's since the 80s that we may have been in a Group 1 in the 90s. I've pretty much been flying since we won the match, so I haven't had a chance to look. But we're talking, you know, 25 years plus anyway since we've been in this level. So, yeah, the lads are buzzing. So we don't have long to wait for the draw to come out tomorrow. About 4:30, we'll see who we draw and where we play them. Hopefully we get a home tie.
Who are you hoping for in a draw? I know these are the questions that reporters pose to managers post-match usually, and they're like, oh, we'll take anyone who it doesn't really matter, you know, it's all about ourselves. But in terms of who Ireland might want to get?
Yeah, look, it's a bit like when you qualify for a Grand Slam. Do you want the top seed and get the day kind of on a big court and all the excitement that goes with that, or do you want somebody as low ranked as possible so you can try and build your way into the draw? Probably the latter. The type of teams we potentially could be playing, we could have Greece, you know, with Stefanos Tsitsipas, you know, whatever he is, 4 or 5 in the world right now. So we haven't had a caliber of player like that, obviously, without the tournaments. We don't have the ATP tournament in Ireland, so we haven't had guys like that playing in this country in many, many years. So from a development exposure perspective for Irish tennis, you know, that would certainly be a positive, but obviously it would be a challenge, and more of a challenge than maybe some of the other countries that we've traditionally played in Group 2 over the years, like Turkey and Lithuania, you know, teams that we've competed well against and beaten. So I don't think there's a massive step up in level from the teams you're playing in Group 2 to Group 1. But obviously you have those couple of outliers in the group where you could come up against somebody top 10, top 20 in the world.
Okay. On the match itself, so as I mentioned, Ireland beat Barbados 3-2. So in theory, there were 5 matches within the overall competition here. So on Saturday, Simon Carr and David O'Hare beat experienced Barbados pair Darian King and Hayden Lewis 7-6, 6-3. Ireland's number one Carr then lost 6-3, 6-2 to King, making it 2-2 overall, and then setting up the decisive singles match between Oscar Ohushin and Kai Marshall. So before we talk about that, the one that saw Ireland get over the line, how do you reflect on the opening matches there?
Yeah, we had on the Friday before, we had Simon Carr put in a really clinical performance against their number 2 in straight sets, which gave us a great start. We went 1-0 up, and then Oscar Ohushin played a really good match actually against Darian King, who's been about 106 in the world, I think, is his highest ranking. Oscar's 700 in the world right now. I think both Simon and Oscar are both playing at a level that's a little bit above, where, quite a bit above where their ranking is. Simon was out for 6 months last year, so I think in 6 months' time, I think we'll see his ranking kind of catch up with his level. And similarly for Oscar as well. So we did well to be in a position where we were still in it with one all, but we knew from the day we arrived that the doubles was going to be absolutely crucial. So Simon Carr and David O'Hare did an unbelievable job getting us through that doubles match, which gave us an opportunity then to win. If we won one of the next two singles, we were going to win the tie. But we were 6-4 down at the tie break in the first set in the doubles, and the guys gave some phenomenal points, and we got through. And then, you know, it was incredibly humid out there, and Darren King kind of owns that course. He's been winning, barely lost a match on that course in his whole career. He's 31 now. So Simon wasn't able to get over the line on that one, but Oscar was clinical in a really... Those two matches are about as pressurised as it gets, the tennis player. And he was probably, that little bit higher ranked than his opponent, but he was really clinical and did a great job kind of managing emotions. He was up a set and a break when the rain came as well, so we had to go out in for an hour. The light was fading, but we got back out there and got it done. So the lads are buzzing.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, listen, Conor Nyland, really, really good news, and it's great to see the victory against Barbados. And as you mentioned, that playoff draw is tomorrow, so we might be chatting to you during the week, reflecting on the playoff draw and what is next for Tennis Ireland. But for now, thanks so much for taking the call. Really appreciate it. Sinead, that is all we have time for. Do stay tuned to 2FM because Tara Kumar is up next. Marie is back tomorrow on Game On, so do tune in from 6 p.m. as always. But for now, big thanks to Laura Lee Davis, our BCO, and John Farrell, who was producing this evening's show. From all of the Game On team, well, it's bye for now.